Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar about how to set up a compliant credit reporting operation. Credit reporting has become a very complicated and complex component of the ARM industry, and compliance, I'm going to try and keep up with my alliteration here, is much more difficult than it has been in years past. We are fortunate to have a panel of experts from within the collections industry who will share their insights about how a collection agency should set up an effective and compliant credit reporting operation. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Microbuilt. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit now about today's speakers. LaDonna Bowling started at Contract Callers in 1996 as manager of the utility collections portfolio. She then became the trainer for the agency. Her mission in the agency was to change the mindset of the collection staff to treat consumers with dignity and respect, showing them that you can be as successful as a collector using consumer-friendly methods. She currently serves as the company's director of call center operations. She is very active with the Georgia Collectors Association and has served on their board since 2010. Michelle Dove is the general counsel and chief compliance officer for IC System in St. Paul, Minnesota. She has served the ARM industry for nearly 15 years and is admitted to practice law in Minnesota and Wisconsin. She's represented her company and clients in numerous federal and state regulatory audit and litigated matters. Chrissy Rue is a co-owner and senior vice president of third-party operations and chief compliance officer at Credit Solutions. Before coming to Credit Solutions, Chrissy started working in the collections industry, at the age of 16, in charge of collecting television fees for local hospitals in Lewiston, Maine. Chrissy is certified as a collector, a credit and collection compliance officer, a collection floor manager, and received a scholar designation from ACA International. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please type it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. Today's event is being recorded, and a recording of this discussion will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, if you've never participated in one of my webinars before, this is an audio-only event. There is no video component or slides, so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. And with that, let's launch into today's discussion. LaDonna, let me give you the honor of the first question. Let's start very basic. You're a collection agency. You either by choice or because a client has sort of asked you or requested you to do so, you decide you want to start credit reporting. What are the first steps? How does an agency go about applying to be able to report to a credit bureau?
Well, thank you, Mike. The three major credit bureaus, Talking, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, all have pretty user-friendly websites. They have guidebooks that you can download that will walk you through the steps of signing up for them. But in a nutshell, the first thing you do is you establish your membership. You complete, an online application. You sign a data agreement. You register, so to speak, and then you let them know that either you're going to be reporting your data directly or you're going to have a third party report your data for you, because some agencies go that route where they get a third party to do it for them. They approve you. They might come and do a site visit. You'll have to provide some documents about your company, your when it was incorporated, if that applies, business licenses, company owner information, those types of things, and then establish points of contact within your organization, somebody from credit and collections, somebody from data, and a central contact person that's going to be in charge of these things. Submit a test file, register the eOSCAR database, and then I think it typically takes anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks after you have submitted your application to actually start sending files. And again, that's it pretty much in a nutshell. And
I guess we can hang up and I'll go home now.
But their websites are very friendly, and walk you through things so you can do your research you know, before you start and just kind of know what you're getting into.
See, it's funny you mentioned that because I was on one of the, I won't say which one, but I was on one of the bureau's websites yesterday trying to figure out, like, if I was coming to this, just to the homepage, could I figure it out? And it wasn't necessarily very easy. I couldn't find, you mentioned the handbooks or the guidebooks that they have. I really couldn't sort of figure it out because there was just so much information and so many different products they were serving, you know, they were offering or trying to sell. Is, you know, is there, do you recommend sort of reaching out to the bureau first, or do you kind of, should they sort of familiarize themselves and start from the website and try to kind of find their way from there?
Well, I prefer to do a little homework before I venture into something new. And, you know, like if you just go to Experience General website, you know, it's going to take you a little point and clicking to find out where you need to go for data reporting, but you could go directly to Experian.com/data reporting. It would take you where you needed to go. And Equifax is similar, Equifax.com/business/data furnishers. And TransUnion is pretty much the same way, TransUnion.com/data reporting. And it'll take you to the page that gives you the good information on what you need to do. And they have toll-free numbers, too, listed, so you could call if you're not a person who likes to read and digest information. You could call and have someone give you the information over the phone.
And if I may interject here, hi, guys.
Sure.
This is Christy. I definitely prefer the old-fashioned way, picking up the phone and calling. And in my experience with the three bureaus, they have been extremely forthcoming with their time and you know, they're great at hand-holding and kind of making you feel at ease about the whole process and being able to have that conversation and answer some of your questions or anything that you might be concerned about when it comes to credit reporting. They've all been absolutely wonderful, absolutely wonderful. So pick up the phone and call them if you want to get started. Nothing wrong with that. And again, you know, they're absolutely available there for you anytime.
Good point. But you can count on a site visit. I said maybe a site visit. You can pretty much count on a site visit. So come out to validate that you are a legitimate business.
Yeah, and similarly to state licensing, is what I've experienced for, you know, the investigation into the owners and board members. You know, it'll be a background check, credit check, and, you know, you have to hand over your firstborn or your lastborn, depending on which agency.
I would do that gladly.
No, it is actually, it's an easy process.
Sorry, I got disconnected there. I apologize. Go ahead, LaDonna.
No worries, Mike. We carried on without you. It was hard, but we managed.
Thank you.
And some agencies only report to one of the major three. Some report to all three, and I think that comes down to a business decision. I know that we're driven by client expectation as far as reporting. Because when I came on board here, we were reporting to all three, and we've just continued reporting to all three. But a lot of that's driven by client expectation.
And that's a great point, LaDonna, for those folks out there that are thinking about it. Perhaps they just want to dip in the water and start with one agency and kind of see how that goes before they report to all agencies.
Yeah. Because yeah, there's no law that says you have to report to all three.
Now, you had said, LaDonna, I think that the process was 4 to 6 weeks. That's sort of start to finish. Is that normally, normally how long it would take?
Yeah, around 4 to 6 weeks. And they're kind of vague with that. And as long as you're doing your due diligence on your end, but you'll find that they're pretty easy, you know, like she mentioned, you know, to work with, and they want to close the process as quickly as possible. So, you know, if you can comply with all the requirements, get all your agreements back and do what you're supposed to do, and then, you know, work with them on setting up the time for the site visit, you know, the rest gets pretty easy. Well, I'm not going to say easy because then it comes down to, you know, how you're going to get your files back and forth, and is your system capable of adhering to their Metro 2 reporting format, which is a requirement, you know, from all the bureaus on how you send your files over. And I think that's why some agencies use a third party to transmit their files, is because their software doesn't have the ability to handle it.
You mentioned comply, which is going to be an important part of our discussion today. And Michelle, I want to bring you in at this point. Compliance, credit reporting are two things that kind of go hand in hand today. Maybe you can start to, we can start to kind of talk about some of the different compliance requirements when it comes to credit reporting and things that collection agencies need to be aware of.
Sure. Christine and LaDonna did a great job talking about the logistics and setting it up and getting your files flowing with the bureaus. I think from my perspective as a compliance officer, and I think the other panelists would agree, that process is 4 to 6 weeks, just getting everything hooked up. I think behind the scenes, the other piece of it is getting the process documented, making sure that the process is compliant with applicable law, and then testing the process. And so there is the information flow and getting that information to the bureaus. That's one side of the equation. But I think equally important, at least to the CFPB or the, let's see, FPBC or whatever they're called today, is the compliance side and the documentation. And we've been through what was the CFPB audit on credit reporting. So I can tell you firsthand that I know how important the compliance piece is to the Bureau. And so what that means is anything that you're doing, all parts of your credit reporting practice, from the time the account is placed and is eligible for credit reporting, how is that determined? What is the data first delinquency that you're going to provide to the bureaus? How are you determining that? How is your creditor client determining that? All the way through, the information actually flowing to the bureaus, how are disputes handled? And then what are you doing? What is your company doing to audit the information that's provided to the bureaus to make sure that it's accurate? The CFPB spent a lot of time asking us, well, you report all of these debts, millions of debts, how do you know the information you're reporting is correct? And they were keenly focused on making sure that we had checks in place to make sure we could stand behind the information and the creditor would stand behind the information. So I think, you need to be making sure the information you're providing, that your creditor client will stand behind it. You need to make sure that the process, the information is being updated at least on a monthly basis. As of September of last year, the bureaus all put in place requirements that you have the date of birth or the social. So there are just additional regulatory requirements. And I think before you dive in, I would almost say before you call the bureaus to, talk about getting your files moving, I would really review the FCRA, with a fine-tooth comb, and I would really go through Reg V, because that's going to talk a lot about how you handle disputes and how you investigate disputes, and what communications you need to have with consumers if they have questions about information that's being reported. So, start with the FCRA and Reg V, read through those, understand what the CFPB expects. Obviously, as LaDonna mentioned, Metro 2 is going to dictate the information that you need to provide. And then the CFPB bulletins are a really good source of information just to check and make sure that you're documenting properly and that you're communicating with consumers properly, or at least in accordance with the CFPB's expectations.
Yeah, and let me add to that, make sure that you have staff on hand, because, the e-Oscar is another part of the process with, that's how consumers can, dispute their debts, through the bureaus, and then the e-Oscar system is what gets that information out to you, and you do your communication through that, and whether using a software or it's being done manually, there's some training and additional time to be spent, learning that.
Yeah, and that's such a key part of the process, because Reg V is going to very clearly dictate how many days you have to investigate, what type of an investigation is required, and then what is communicated to the consumers back about the investigation and the outcome. So we had a little hiccup, I'll say, with the regulators over our investigation response process. And so it has been ironed out, I can assure you. But I just really would encourage anyone who's thinking about credit reporting to go through Reg V very, very carefully.
And that's V as in Victor, right?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure everyone got that. At this point, I want to stop for a minute and talk a little bit about today's webinar sponsor, Microbuilt. For more than 35 years, Microbuilt has been helping businesses assess and manage risk. They were a pioneer in the now exploding alternative credit data space, and as such have refined their products and services to deliver true business value. Over the years, Microbuilt has invested heavily in acquiring best-in-class data. They've built sophisticated systems for keeping their data fresh and accurate, and powerful predictive models for making decisions around lending, leasing, collections, and risk management. With Microbuilt, you can customize the products you need and how much you want to spend, and all of their products are provided through a single, simple access portal. Whether you're working in originations or debt collection, screening a potential hire or tenant, planning for growth, or keeping up with regulatory requirements, Microbuilt can be your partner, providing the insight and information you need to protect your business, grow your bottom line, and keep your company running smoothly. For more information, please contact Microbuilt at 1-800-884-4747 or visit microbuilt.com, and that's spelled microbuilt.com. Thanks again to Microbuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. And now let's pick up with our discussion. Michelle, I want to get back to some of the things you were mentioning. You know, a lot of those questions in terms of, you know, determining when the date of delinquency, the first day of delinquency, things like that, are those things that the credit bureaus are going to help you with, or are those things you kind of have to figure out on your own?
In my experience, those are things you have to figure out on your own. And I know the CFPB has done a lot of digging into other agencies that are credit reporting and has asked a lot of questions about how was this determined, who determined it, and, you know, just making sure that period of obsolescence is calculated correctly. So we really looked back to our creditors, because really the creditor is the one who needs to provide the information to determine how, you know, what is the date of first delinquency. So that is going to be something you're going to have to work with your creditors on to make sure you're getting the information correctly. But in my experience, the bureaus will not help you with that. And this is such a sensitive and almost tricky issue that I would encourage someone who's looking at setting up a process from scratch to likely consult with legal counsel just to make sure you're doing it correctly. The risk of not doing it correctly, I think, is pretty great. And if you have any regulator come in and look at how you're calculating, you're really going to want to be able to show them that your formula for calculating is correct, the information is correct, and that you verified the information with your creditor client and you're calculating it correctly.
Yeah, and that's such a risky area, because that data delinquency determines, you know, as we all know, how long it stays on someone's credit. Mm-hmm. And that's why that's a very sticky or touchy area.
And what we do, of course, our clients, if they can provide that to us, we use that. And our attorney advised us to have absolutely what our clients give us for date of delinquency, and then to have our own policy in place for the clients that do not give us that date. So there is a formula that we use for the clients that do not give it to us. And you have to make sure your policies and procedures are accurate, up to date, reviewed, and in place and working properly with all of this as well. You want to review your policies constantly to ensure that what you're doing matches.
Yeah, agreed. And even though it seems like it's a daunting task, which it is and can be, ladies, tell me how you feel about this. You know, when the three bureaus laid out their National Consumer Assistance Plan, and Michelle, I think you mentioned it, you know, with some of the changes they put in place and their requirements, I find that I have a little bit more peace of mind, since they are processing things in the same fashion, in the same format. They're rejecting things that shouldn't be there. It's all the same reporting formats, and I just find that I'm getting more consistency amongst all three bureaus. How do y'all feel about that?
Absolutely. I'm seeing the same, LaDonna. I feel like we're in the best place that we've ever been with the credit bureaus. I think they're being held accountable from a lot of different angles, as well as us. And I think we're in a great position. I think it's going to get, you know, that much better as we move forward with all of the credit reporting.
Yeah.
I would agree too. I think we are still seeing a little bit of inconsistency among the three bureaus. that we're reporting to, and we're actually reporting to two of the major bureaus and then one of the lesser known bureaus. We see a little bit of inconsistency across the bureaus as to what they're rejecting. For example, one bureau will reject because of because of the creditor's name, they'll reject it because it contains certain words where another bureau will accept it. So there are still some of those hiccups, but I would agree, you know, anytime these bureaus give us, or departments or whomever, give us more guidance onto what the expectations are, I would agree it gives me peace of mind that, you know, now they're telling us how to do it right. So I do think that there have been improvements as well.
Yeah. Which is one of my selling points.
There's been a whack of questions that have come in so far. And in order to kind of keep people sending their questions in, I want to try and get to some of these now. Some of these are things we were planning on talking about anyways. Is it better to report to all three bureaus, or will membership and reporting to just one be sufficient?
That's going to be
a personal business decision.
And I think I spoke about this in the last webinar. Demographics and geography has a lot to do with that. There are certain areas where TransUnion is more relevant and certain areas where Experian is, and same with Equifax. I think just really knowing your community and where you're collecting, and you know, which bureau or which bureaus will give you the most bang for your buck. There's some research involved there, but you can get that done.
Agreed.
Yeah, I agree too. I see in the past, up until very recently actually, had been reporting to the three major bureaus, and at the beginning of the year stopped reporting to one, which I won't identify, but just because we were finding that there were some issues in updating the data. Our dispute updates weren't going through timely, if at all, and there are just some data issues that concerned us enough that we stopped reporting. And I can say we did not notice, there's no noticeable impact to our liquidation or to our collections in not reporting to the third bureau. But I do agree that you need to really do your market research, because my understanding is that TransUnion has more of a presence on the West Coast. So if your debt is primarily on the West Coast, you're probably going to want to report to TransUnion versus another bureau that doesn't have as strong of a presence there. So I do agree that you need to do a little research. But reporting to one bureau versus two versus three is going to be a business decision. And my opinion is that with each bureau, you know, the more you're reporting, obviously, the more chance that you can face suit under the FCRA or bring more claims. And so, you know, it's a tricky balance to strike. And some of it you just have to figure out through trial and error. Like I was saying, you know, we stopped reporting to a third bureau just because we found that the risk and the lawsuits and the expense just didn't justify it. And we were getting nearly the same results just reporting to two.
Yeah. You know, Michelle, we did the exact same thing, and we only currently report to two, and we never saw a decrease in collections whatsoever. And, you know, it was for the same reason. First of all, it's a risk to report, period. You are opening yourself up to the FCRA lawsuits. You know, whether they're valid or not, you're still opening yourself up. And the more exposure, the more risk. So that makes sense.
That comes down to us validating what we do. You know, you found that out by, I'm sure, complaints, because I saw, you know, in our shop, when I was looking at some of the complaints we were getting, two of the bureaus had done their job, and the third bureau was just like somewhere out there, hadn't processed. And I think that's what the BCFP wants us to do, is to police what we're doing. And that's just proof that, you know, auditing, internal auditing makes sense.
Absolutely. Accuracy is probably the most important piece of credit reporting. We even try to incorporate into our client contracts clean data. And I'm sure, Sean and LaDonna, you guys do as well. But that doesn't let us off the hook. We still have to do everything possible to make sure the information that we're reporting is accurate. something that we've also incorporated is making sure we do recons with our clients prior to reporting, just to ensure that our balances are the most up to date.
And just to kind of give the other side of the coin here, Mike, I know at this point in the webinar, perhaps certain attendees are saying, well, why would I even credit report? It sounds like a lot of work and a lot of risk. Yeah. I'm not understanding why these agencies, why these three women are telling us that their agencies are still doing it. And I can tell you that, you know, our ops guys in preparing for the webinar, I went back to our ops guys and said, well, tell me why we're credit reporting, because when you start to look at all the risk and the work, it seems like a kind of a grim picture. But our ops guy, our ops VP estimated the lift is probably about 20% on credit reporting accounts versus non-credit reported. And we've got one client that is credit reporting, and because of the Social Security and birth date requirement last year, about 30% of their portfolio was not able to credit report. And so if you're really going to do analysis on whether or not there's a benefit to credit reporting, you've got to look at one client. You can't compare obviously client to client or different portfolios even, but we have one client that 30% of their accounts couldn't credit report, and the liquidation difference between the reported and not reporting was about 40%. So a 40% improvement on liquidation on credit reporting for that one client. And that isn't across the board. Not all clients will have that dramatic of an impact, but it's a huge tool, and it's very helpful in liquidating, especially when you're talking about collecting older debts, where you've sent the letters, you've made the calls, and you're just out of tools. Credit reporting can be very, very useful, especially the longer you report, the more you see the return on the investment. But again, those are the debts where we see the most complaints and the most litigation. So it's going to depend on the portfolio. It's going to depend on the agency's risk tolerance if credit reporting is the right decision for you. But certainly, I can only speak for our company. It's very much a useful tool. It's just you got to do it right, or else the regulatory fees and the lawsuits and all of the expense associated with doing it wrong is going to quickly eat up any profit that you're going to make from credit reporting.
Yeah, I agree. We see a 20-25% lift. We do a lot of utility collections, and it's just the nature of the beast with utilities for consumers to pay the utility. But we have one utility in the Northeast that does their own credit reporting, and whereas we might get 30% of our payments, direct payments, through our other utilities where we do the credit reporting, this particular client, 70% of our payments are direct payments, and I attribute that to them doing their credit reporting. And that's where the consumer, they see it on the credit, and they see this utility is the one who placed it, and that's where they're sending the money. I wear a compliance hat, but I'm an ops person at heart, and I always like to look at the bottom line and what it brings to the table, and weigh out the risk. And in my opinion, we've determined that the risk is not as great if you're just doing your due diligence, and like you mentioned, with your policies and procedures, and you're testing what you're doing.
And no, Mike, I just want to,
if I may
just circle back quickly on the compliance front. I mentioned the FCRA and Reg V, but I failed to mention there also may be state laws that are going to dictate your credit reporting process or certain parts of it. For example, certain states, if you're going to credit report, you need to indicate the eligibility for credit reporting on the initial notice. And California is one state. In particular, that comes to mind. So I failed to mention that there may also be state laws that are going to govern the practice. But I just wanted to point it out to say, if you're only looking at federal law, you may be missing part of the equation. And the reason that comes to mind at this portion of the webinar is because just from indicating that the account may be credit reported, even before, you've got to wait your 30 days before you can credit report, or longer in some instances, but just indicating that on the letter account, we looking at a portfolio where we say the account is eligible versus an account where we don't have the credit reporting language, there's a significant lift just in early payments on the accounts where we mention credit reporting even before it's occurred. So just the mention of it is a useful tool in our letters. But there are states that require that you indicate the account is eligible for credit reporting, and there are states that don't have that requirement. So I just want to make sure everyone's aware of that as well.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. Michelle, you mentioned this earlier in terms of, you know, the importance of kind of accuracy. And I know, Christy, you mentioned sort of actually working this into the contract. We got a question that came in, you know, asking about how you know the information you have is correct. You know, is there an internal audit process that you're going through to verify the data, or is it just, you know, the client giving you two thumbs up that you're good to go? I mean, what's the how do you kind of know that the information you're getting is correct?
I think that's, you know, obviously that's very difficult. If the creditor is getting updated balance information, or if they're getting a dispute that challenges the accuracy of the information and they're not passing that to the agency that's credit reporting, that's very risky and is a very bad situation. So really your data is only as good in some, in a lot of instances, as what you're getting from your creditor. You know, we had conversations with the CFPB about this exact issue, and they said, well, how do you know? And the truth is, in a lot of instances, we just have to rely on the creditor. But I think the way that you can detect issues with the integrity of the data is through your audit process. And so we at IC, the way we do it is we're monitoring disputes, and we know what the baseline dispute percentage is for each project, each portfolio, because we've been aggregating the data over a long period of time. So that if we see, you know, generally about 5% of the credit reported accounts are disputed, or 10% or whatever the number is for that portfolio, if there is a significant increase or decrease in the dispute or in the inquiries, or there's a number of ways you can monitor it, but if there is, you know, variation in that baseline number based on our monthly audit, then we know that there might be a problem with the data. Either the data file, you know, there was an error in the data file that went to the bureaus, there was an error in the portfolio that was communicated from the creditor. There's a number of ways that you can look at it, but that is kind of our primary way to check the integrity of the data. And then we have account audits that go, that our client service group is running monthly to, you know, spot check and make sure the data is accurate. But it's a big issue, and it's something that, you know, the bureaus aren't going to give you a pass if you say, well, the creditor told us and we didn't do anything to verify. Part of the process has got to be some internal audits to make sure that you can rely on the data.
Agree.
Yes, and Mike, what we do, we incorporate client system access into most of our contracts. We will have a few clients that are not comfortable with giving us access to their systems, but for the most part, people are open to that. And in our everyday process, while we're working, when the collectors are talking to consumers, you can spot any trends from a specific client as far as payments not getting reported or posted. That's pretty quick. It sticks out like a sore thumb, and we usually investigate that. And if we do have any of those issues, we halt credit reporting altogether for that client until we rectify any balances and any issues moving forward. And we do have clients that we will not report for because we cannot verify the accuracy. And we do have complaints or disputes or something relating to, you know, us believing that maybe the accounts are not as accurate as they should be. And I had mentioned earlier, we do a recon prior to reporting to credit. So we'll ask all of our clients to give us a recon once a week for us to go through and get everything as up to date as we can.
Now, how often do you send files? I know that the requirement is you have to send a full file every month. We send a full file every week. What about y'all? What do y'all do?
We do the same, LaDonna.
Yeah,
we are weekly too.
Disputes. Yeah, I think it cuts down on disputes, because if you reported somebody as outstanding last Wednesday, then they pay you this Monday, and you know that your reporting date's on Friday, you do a report this Friday, and then what was outstanding is now paid in full.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of questions that have come in when we were talking about data delinquency. Someone asked if there's a formula that you can use to determine the data first delinquency if a client has not provided it. Is that something that is possible to figure out?
Yes.
Okay.
But you have to, whatever you establish as how you're going to determine what the data delinquency is, that's your policy and that's how you do it. I'm trying to think what ours is, because if the client doesn't give it, then we'll look, we'll calculate the date of delinquency as when the last payment was received or something like that. I can't remember what our exact policy is on it.
Date that the last statement was sent out. That's
yeah.
There are several different ways that you can.